When I was younger, like many of you, I first was a Cub Scout and then eventually advanced through Weebelows into Boy Scouts. I did not stick around in Boy Scouts very long. I often joke that I was a Boy Scout for 5 minutes. It was a little longer than that. I think I made my way to second class, but by the time my freshman year of high school rolled around, I had other priorities in my life, other activities that I wanted to devote more time and attention to, and so I left Boy Scouts behind. There are times when I wish I had not, where I wish I had stuck it out, made my way perhaps all the way through the Eagle Scout program. I know many young men and women who are in the Girl Scout program who value greatly the time that they spent in their younger years and even in later years in doing that work. Though I didn't stick around for too terribly long, I did learn a few things while I was in Boy Scouts. I learned how to make a pretty decent fire. At this point, I'm lazy enough that I cheat with all kinds of accelerants, but then I learned how to do it kind of with one match. I learned a few knots that have come in handy over the years. When I was into rock climbing in my college years, those knots most certainly saved my life. I did less climbing and more falling when I was rock climbing. I learned orienteering, which is something I've never actually had to put into use, but I really enjoyed learning at the time. If you're not sure what orienteering is, that's finding your way around with a compass, which is really becoming antiquated at this time, now that we have GPS and other things that can help us along. I learned a lot as a Boy Scout, but the thing that really stuck with me, and I think this is the intent of the Boy Scouts, is the motto, be prepared. Right? We know that motto. Many of us, even those of us who aren't in scouting or haven't been, know that the Boy Scout motto is be prepared. And that somehow got really ingrained into me. I like to be a person who is prepared, probably often over-prepared. And my preparedness often is connected to gadgets and stuff. So for me, being prepared means having all of the stuff I need if any contingency should happen. If you have never traveled with me and you are a light packer, we should probably travel separately. Anytime I go somewhere, one bag is almost never enough, because who knows what clothes and shoes I'm going to need? Who knows what other electronic devices I'm going to need? Our family has a pickup truck, mostly because otherwise we couldn't get anywhere with all the stuff that we take with us, different places. I am a big believer in Southwest Airlines because you get two free checked bags. I pretty much don't fly with anybody else. Because I like to be prepared. I don't like getting into a situation and not having what I wish I would have because I left it at home or I left it in the office or whatever the case may be. Being prepared is key for me. And so that, I think, is why I really like this parable that Jesus tells today in the 25th chapter of Matthew, because I feel like the people I relate to the most in this story are the heroes of the story. Jesus tells the story of 10 bridesmaids who are preparing for the wedding banquet. It's important to understand, if you haven't studied Middle Eastern culture, especially ancient Middle Eastern culture, to know that weddings in that time and in that place very different than the weddings that most of us are used to attending in 21st century America, where you go to the church or wherever the place may be, the service is 20 or 25 minutes if you're in the Protestant tradition, then you head off to a reception that's 3 or 4 or 5 hours long and you call it a night at that point, and that's a good celebration. Back in those times, and this is still true in some cultures today, the wedding celebration took place over many days, a week or even longer than that, and would kind of pop up at different times. It wasn't even necessarily you had to be at a certain time at a certain place. It would just happen, the wedding itself and all of the celebrations. Keep in mind, these were close-knit communities. Most all of the time, the marriages were taking place within that community, people who knew each other their whole lives. It was a smaller group of people. You didn't have to wait for Uncle Joe to come all the way in from Michigan. Everybody was there, and so things could pop up. And that's what's happening in this story, this parable that Jesus is telling, is even the bridal party, the bridesmaids themselves, they don't know what's going to happen next. And so they're gathered together. They're waiting for the bridegroom to come and to lead them to the next thing. But they don't know when that's going to take place. And so they have with them their lamps in case that happens at night. And as they're waiting, we see this happens but for the disciples too in the stories of the scriptures. They fall asleep because they've been waiting long enough. The bridegroom hasn't come. And then at midnight, the bridegroom shows up. They're not expecting the bridegroom anytime. Here he comes and says, "Come with me. The wedding banquet is about to begin." And here's where the division happens. Half of the bridesmaids have been wise. Not only do they have their lamps with the oils in the lamps, they also have an extra flask of oil if that should run out. But then we have the foolish bridesmaids who have brought their lamps. They were prepared to that extent, but they haven't brought their two checked bags worth of oil with them. And they're not prepared. And so they quickly turn to the other bridesmaids and say, please share with us. And this is one of those places where you would maybe hope that the wise bridesmaids might share, but that would ruin the story. So Jesus sticks to the story. And they refuse to give their oil to the other bridesmaids. Say, no, we're prepared, you're not. You better go get some oil, make it fast, because you're going to miss this. And so those wise bridesmaids who had their oil go off with the bridegroom, and those who didn't go off to try to find some. And by the time they find the oil and make their way to the wedding banquet, the door is closed and they're not allowed in. As somebody who likes to be prepared, I'm rooting hard and excited when those wise bridesmaids get into the banquet and those who were unprepared didn't make it in, even if it's harsh. And Jesus uses this parable to prepare the disciples. They almost certainly didn't even understand this parable in the moment. It would take eventually Jesus' death and resurrection for them to understand what he is saying, but he uses this parable to tell them to be prepared at all times. For as he says in other places, the Son of Man will come like a thief in the night, as he says here, will come, and you know not the day nor the hour, so you must be prepared in season and out at all times. Have your oil with you. It seems like a pretty straightforward, easy parable to understand, especially for those of us of the Christian faith who do believe that Christ is going to return. Even after 2,000 years of waiting, we believe the promise that that return will come at an hour that we are not expecting, and we need to be prepared. But I think there might be a little bit more to this parable. That surface understanding might be trapping, if you will, a deeper understanding. Noted preacher and Columbia Seminary professor Anna Carter Florence, in her reflections on this passage, wonders whether this parable has more to tell us than just that simple message, be prepared. Something, as she says, any good Boy Scout or insurance agent would remind us to be. Maybe, she surmises, this is a story about the oil that you carry with you. And the parable is very clear. All 10 bridesmaids had lamps, but 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. The wise ones brought flasks of oil with their lamps when it was time to wait for the bridegroom. The foolish ones showed up with lamps and nothing to keep those lamps burning. And when your lamp goes out, you may have gallons of oil sitting at home, but that's not going to do you any good in that moment. So what does that look like, she wonders, the kind of oil that you carry with you? What does that look like if it's not a commodity that we can buy and sell? Well, maybe it depends on the kind of oil we're talking about. At Columbia Seminary, where Carter Florence teaches, they give a lecture to the students about the spiritual life of a preacher. At one time during that lecture, they brought an oil lamp out, the kind with a wick and the real oil in the bottom of it, as a visual aid. They talked about the role of a pastor, or even just the role of a Christian, for that matter, and how it is to be a light for others, to be the light of the world. And then they lit the wick and they watched that lamp burn. But, and here is the rigged part, because there was only a little bit of oil in that lamp, it only burned for a few moments. They then asked the students, what happens when the oil runs out? Well, then the lamp light goes out and you have nothing to give. And as a pastor with no oil, as a Christian with no oil, we can't be the light of the world for anybody, no matter how much they want to. So then they asked, what fills you up spiritually when you run dry? What replenishes your oil? Where do you find God, and how can you make sure that you get enough of that oil for your lamp so that God can fill you up again? Because, and here's the catch, you will run dry. And when you run dry, you cannot be a light for anybody. It's fairly simple. When the arrow on the gas tank points to empty, you're out of gas. If a 2-year-old doesn't get a nap, that 2-year-old's going to crash. when you haven't had a conversation with your spouse in 3 weeks that hasn't revolved around carpooling, your marriage is getting dry. If you've worked 80-hour weeks for longer than you care to know, the relationships in your life are going to suffer. It's not really something any of us can avoid. There are some kinds of fuel that are just not negotiable. The time will come when you have to draw on the oil that you have right there in that moment on your body, in your flask, if you will. It isn't going to come from your pension savings. It isn't going to come from your good intentions and your long-range plans. It isn't going to come from what fuels you spiritually right now in this moment. It's going to come from where you see God. And where is that? Where is it that we see God? Well, Jesus tells us just a few verses after these. He says, I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was a stranger and you welcomed me in. I was in prison and you visited me. I was sick and you comforted me. That's where we find Christ. That's where we find God. And that is where we get filled up. This is where we get filled up, right here in this sacred space. Consider this space, I hope, your spiritual gas station. So perhaps we can look at this parable a little differently than we have before. Yes, it does serve as a warning that the time is coming and you know not when, so be prepared at all times. But as we've been encouraged, it might also serve as an encouragement for joy. See, because you don't fill your lamp up because you're afraid you're going to get locked out of the kingdom of heaven. You don't stockpile oil because then you can turn everyone else away. And well, that's kind of fun. No, you just stop at the filling station and you fill your flask and you take it with you because you can't wait. You can't wait to meet that bridegroom and you don't want to miss him. You fill that flask out of joy. And that's the only price of oil. When you think about it, the desire to meet Jesus when he comes, which he will soon and very soon. 10 bridesmaids took their lamps and they went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 of them were wise. Which one will we be? In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.